Jim Rubens, welcome to All Things Considered.
Good evening.
We'll start with the economy. You've said your number one priority is to bring good-paying jobs back to American soil. And there was a recent report that suggested the jobs being created in the recovery aren't paying as well as those lost during the recession. What's driving that, do you think, and what should be done about it?
We've got to make product and services in America again. We've got to shift our policy away from being a progressively consumer-based economy to a production economy. And it's going to take a variety of things to do that. We've got to change our tax code. We have a tax code which is forcing companies offshore, forcing manufacturing offshore. We've got to simplify and make lower the rates on corporate and personal taxes. Simpler, fairer, flatter tax code. We need to fix our regulatory structure. We are now the 17th most economically free country in the world. We've slipped from third in just 13 years. We've got to dial back these regulations. I'm proposing that every 10 years, all these regulations be sunset. They go back to Congress. Congress looks at them. Are they compliant with statute? Are they constitutional? Are they doing what they're supposed to be doing? So we can reduce the burden on small business.
You've proposed an alternative to Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act.
Yep.
And one of the pieces of that is, and I'll just quote from your website, to accommodate diversity in insurance preferences. So, for example, the so-called young invincibles could opt for catastrophic coverage only, or someone dealing with infertility could have that added to their coverage. Someone who isn't could leave that out. Does that potentially run the risk, though, of having what we've seen in recent years where people who don't need coverage don't get it, and the people who do need it find the prices higher than they can or would like to pay?
I'm not in favor of mandating people to buy a product and service, and that includes health insurance, so that we need to restructure the insurance marketplace so that people are incentivized to buy insurance. How do you do that? You let the free market, you let insurers and hospital and health providers, whether they be insurers or not, or networks of hospitals and care providers, provide products and services that people want to buy. That's why I'm proposing things like long-term health insurance, so that the young invincibles can buy 20 years or 30 years of health insurance at a known price, be incentivized to take care of themselves in their own interest. It's why I support allowing insurers to have a much broader portfolio of products and services available to consumers so we can structure incentives into the solution so that people are not compelled to buy insurance, so that they want to buy insurance in their own interest. But the marketplace needs to be released from the clutches of Obamacare, which is, you know, has the fingerprints of Gene Shaheen all over it.
You have been critical of the U.S. intervention in Iraq, recently aimed at the group known now as the Islamic State. What is the U.S. role in that region as you see it?
We have a distinct humanitarian role. We have a role in trade. There are cases when coordinated economic, stiff economic sanctions should be used and have been used to good effect, like in Iran. We seek not to have Iran have a nuclear bomb, as is being used now against Russia in their breach of the treaty in the Ukraine. So there is a role, again, for coordinated economic sanctions, for humanitarian aid in the case of the folks being brutalized, this genocide by ISIS. There's a role for trade, for diplomacy, and there's a role for engagement of the regional powers whose interest is just as strong as ours in regional stability. What has not worked is this crazy, haphazard United States policy. Less than a year ago, in September of 2013, Gene Shaheen voted to bomb al-Assad in Syria for the purpose of strengthening ISIS. Now here we are bombing ISIS to weaken them. Less than a year later, we have this crazy, haphazard policy, no plan, no plan to win the war, no plan to exit. So we need to reinstate a long-term military strategy, and I don't think it requires boots on the ground for Americans. So obviously we need the strongest U.S. national defense in the world. We need the most technologically advanced defense in the world. We're weak in certain areas, as I mentioned, on the ground intelligence, industrial espionage, cyber warfare. Our pants are down in these areas. So I perceive the need to strengthen in that area. But we do not need American soldiers, boots on the ground, coming home, these young men and women coming home in boxes without legs and with brain injuries. I am sickened to my heart, and it is not enhanced U.S. national security. So if there are cases when ISIS and other organizations are threatening American national security, we can use surgical mechanisms to eliminate these specific threats when on the ground another means of intelligence discloses such threats, wherever they may originate in the world.
On immigration, you've called for additional resources and personnel to secure the border, and That could be costly, according to a report from Bloomberg Government, that securing the border could cost about $28 billion a year. That's about what we pay now for the entire Department of Justice. That would be money well spent?
Well, we're spending, the latest numbers I've seen is that we're spending about $18 billion a year to secure the border. And obviously, it's not very effective. We have the most porous border of any nation in the industrial world. This is insanity. We need to shift resources to building a 1,900-mile fence, and it's going to be a fence which will be physical and technological, and we have to enforce that fence. If we have an open border, we're encouraging two things. We're encouraging people to continue to flow across the border under the notion they can come to America and get free housing, food, education, which our towns and cities such as Manchester can't afford right now. And we're enabling these corrupt dictatorships in countries like in Central America to persist in subjugating their people to gang warfare and internal terrorism in their own countries.
The last question I ask of candidates is to look 6 years down the road, assuming that you win the nomination and then go on to win the general election. What can the citizens of New Hampshire see 6 years from now that Senator Jim Rubins could point to and say, this is where I made a difference in the country?
I'd like to bring bold ideas to the table, as I did in the state Senate, so I can take on the tough issues and get them moved into law. It's going to take 60 votes to get solutions to our country's serious challenges through the U.S. Senate. It's going to take someone who is thoughtful. It's going to take someone who's principled, who can articulate those principles, and it's going to take a statesman to navigate our way through the fog of the differing viewpoints towards 60 votes in the U.S. Senate to get some solutions on the table, talked about among the American people, and passed into law.
Jim Rubins is a candidate running for the Republican nomination in U.S. Senate. Thanks for talking with me.
All right.